it's not about making $1 million a year. It's about how do you maximize what you're currently doing to make your life better. It's all about that. And here's another big trap that I've seen so many people fall into. And I've been guilty of this. I want to be very clear. Like, this really plagued me when I started my career because I always thought, man, I want to make $1 million a year. I want to make $1 million. And why am I not doing it? I just had this big, lofty goal. I never broke it down into smaller steps, just like your money. But you have to enjoy the process of who you become during that time as well. Because once you start making changes and put more money away every month, or stop spending so much every month on things you don't need, or pay off debt and save and invest for your future every month, that's a powerful tool. It's not about getting to that certain point, it's about enjoying the whole time and that whole path forward. Don't miss out. Don't be mad. Don't be sad. Don't be depressed on things you don't have. It's not about having things. I mean, if you're 90 years old and if you're on your deathbed, you're not going to care if you bought that watch. You're not going to remember those pair of shoes. They're all a waste. You're going to remember the memories with the loved ones in your life. So it's not about things. Mitigate that. Just enjoy the ride. Really enjoy it and try and get rid of that bad debt because that stress kills. It really has a bad impact on people's lives and their relationships. If you can manage that, you could do anything. You could really, if you can figure that out, you could do anything you want with your life.
Bill, how important is it to understand our relationship to money? Because I think if we're really honest with ourselves, some of us spend money when we're stressed. Some of us spend money when we're depressed and want to feel better about getting something. Money has a really interesting psychological relationship to each of us, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I'm the worst at spending when I'm stressed because it's like a relaxation thing or dopamine hit, right? That's what they call it. And I know my relationship because I'm so aware of it now that I've paid attention to it. But I've also had probably thousands of conversations throughout the years about money with people on a one-to-one or a one-to-two basis or a family, like working with the whole family. So I've seen so much, and that's why I built Diane Money because it's like the missing tool in the financial industry. But the relationship is so crucial. If you have a very scarce mindset, if you're very scarce, you probably grew up that way. It's probably a household thing. From a stress spending standpoint, that was my childhood, 1,000,000%. Like I saw that growing up, I saw my mom do it. It was just not a great way to live. And I really curbed that appetite. I really, really did. I'm not perfect with it, but I really take it back to asking myself that question. Is this me living my best life before I do something big like that? And not just make it a spontaneous purchase because there's money in the bank. It's not the purpose. But if you look at your childhood and how your parents actually acted around money, that's going to be a big tell because those are your first aspects about money. You learned it from your parents or the people around you. So you have to look back in order to look forward. It's a big Dan Sullivan-ism. Understanding how far you've come throughout your life. But if you really take it back to your childhood, if your parents spent all the time, you probably spend all the time. If you're very scarce, because your parents might have been older, maybe they went through the depression. You may not spend a lot of money, but you may not invest a lot of money to make more money. You just have it sitting in the bank account, which, is probably not the best thing to do all the time. So there's a huge variation mark between all of these aspects. And that's why I wanted to create an assessment about your relationship with money. And then I realized no one's going to pay for that. No one wants to know the truth about that. That's like a really deep dive into your own personal life. And that takes work and that takes time. And then the whole concept of, well, why don't we just do the work for the user? And that's where the light bulb went off. And that's where the change came into play. And started working towards it and getting very close, very, very close. To making it even bigger and better than what it already is. So exciting times right now.
That's so cool, Bill, because I think the pain point really is the action, right? And if I let you take over the action of, you know, paying this amount on this credit card or saving for that or whatever, that's then you take the stress and the anxiety out of it, because you've taken over where I'm not willing to step in, where I should.
Totally. I mean, one of our beta users had three credit cards. One of them was, don't quote me on the percentages completely, but one of them was like a 27, a 21, and a 15. They had change on it, like 15.75, but it's arbitrary. And there were different amounts on all three cards. So what we did is we showed them which one to pay off first, because we're able to analyze the interest and what they would pay with the algorithms. It's just doing math. We do the math for you and show them, pay off this one first, pay off this one second, pay off this one third in larger chunks, because they had extra cash flow every month. And just with that planning during the beta testing, they were able to pay off two of those credit cards so quickly because they changed the way they thought about them. And not just put 20 bucks on this one, 20 bucks on this one, 20 bucks on that one.
Yeah.
They really prioritize, okay, here's my goal, pay this off. Because that's what the math told them to do. And it's just showing them a much more efficient path towards financial freedom. Because if you don't have debt, all your income is gravy. Then you can invest. Then you can put money away. Then you could save. Go on more vacations. Vacationing is fun. We should all travel. But yeah, just getting rid of that bad debt is crucial.
So, Bill, you've been in the financial services industry, as you said, since 2008, right out of college. I'd love to get your perspective on that industry, because the way that industry is structured, it's really hard for the consumer to understand. Am I being charged 1% of everything that I have in assets this year? Is it fee based? Which one's better? Is it based on the types of products that a financial advisor sells us? That industry is, it seems like, part of the problem, because they don't have to do much to make a ton of money. Because if you're just getting 1% for managing my money, whether you make me money or not, there's no incentive, right? So I would love your perspective as someone who spent time inside that industry to break that down.
Yeah, and still am part of the industry, mind you. I mean, I still have my other company, and
you've got Blue Financial, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, how do I want to phrase this? If you think about all the different tools and features and products and types of investments that financial advisors have in their belt, per se, there's so much out there. There's 50,000 mutual funds and privately held funds that you could have access to. There's so many different types of investments. There's so much noise around it, too. From an advice standpoint, I would like to give advice for what users should look for in a financial advisor, if I'm going to reframe the question a little bit, and what to avoid. Because I think that's a good way to look at it. There's just too much confusion, just like financials and money as a whole. We're not educated on this, so we want to hire a professional. When we did our will and trust, believe me, we didn't do it. We had my friend do it. Just like when we go to the dentist, I don't do my teeth, our dentist does. They're incredible. But not every dentist is good, not every lawyer is good, and not every financial advisor is good too. So here's what we want to look out for. You want to look out for people who work for just one company and they don't offer you multiple companies' investments. So if you work for a company, ABC, and they only offer you ABC investments, and they don't offer you any other companies, it's probably not a good thing for you. That's part of the issue. And there's a lot of companies or insurance companies like that. You need to have different types of offers. That's a great thing. We're very transparent with all of our costs. On our statements, it shows all of the costs to the user and to the client so that they know what they're paying for. And there needs to be communication around that. And you need to tell your advisor how often you want to be communicated with. That's up to you. You need to communicate that, because on the other side of the table, we don't always know. It's okay to pick up the phone and tell someone if you're happy or unhappy. Because it's your money at the end of the day. Pick up the phone. Don't be afraid. Just because they may know more than you doesn't mean it's right. All right? Always feel free to pick up the phone, make the phone call, ask the questions. I love questions. Questions are always good. And then there's commission, fee-based, and investment advisory fees. So it's not easy, Mark, to make a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of people, and it takes a lot of years and trust to build that up. When I started my career, it was at Prudential, and only about 5% of advisors stayed between years 1 and 5. So really? There's a 95% attrition rate there. Huge. So most people don't even make it past 5 years. You have to do the work. Common theme here, right? Do the work. It just takes time to build up that book of business and get trust. And you have to have a long-term mentality just to be in the business and to invest. Because when the markets are down 20 or 30%, it's probably better to do nothing or to invest more at that time rather than to, oh, get me out, because then you miss. You're guessing. And if you're working with an advisor who's trying to get you in and out, up and down and all around every other week, I think that's a red flag. That's just my opinion. I would stay away from people like that because they're trying to pick the hottest stock. And what are the odds of that? Probably pretty small. So you're better off having a longer term, more consistent approach to your money than just trying to work with someone thinking they're hot stuff and trying to buy you the hottest thing every other week. Doesn't work like that. So slow and steady is not necessarily a bad thing.